This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
This is the F Word, Vancouver's only explicitly feminist radio show. Feminism, a new wave on the radio.
I beat drums in city slums where my heart speaks from. And neck's not back at the sound of a gun, but nobody runs, cause nobody knows if nobody's sons just got shot, so nobody comes and nobody stops. Nobody moving, nobody pauses.
Hello, I'm Ariana Bear here with Nicole Deegan. You are listening to The F Word, Vancouver's only explicitly feminist radio show.
If you're valued primarily for your looks, as women are, then supposedly losing your looks through aging can become a tremendous loss. It's not vanity, it's how we're valued. It affects our relationship to power in this society. Attractiveness gives us more access to approval, money, and respect. We know it shouldn't. And as feminists, we may try to refuse to participate in this game. But it still has an impact. It affects most women's choices, how they feel about themselves, and how they engage or don't engage in the world. As we age, we face internal and external changes. We face exclusion and invisibility in society due to the double hit of ageism and sexism. It's not news. We all know that there's tremendous pressure on women to fit certain ideals for attractiveness. The standards for what's attractive are largely set by advertisers and media industries in general, unquestionably focused on youth. We're supposed to look young to be beautiful. But now older women are portrayed, seen, represented as more sexual. More sexy than ever, we can consume our way into looking younger, supposedly more pretty. We can fight our natural changes so that we don't get old and ugly. We can hang on to our looks, and we'll get approval for it. Hot older women are heaped with praise. They can still compete. But do we want to still compete? Do we want to give up the freedom that can come with aging? For some women, it's a relief to become sexually invisible to men, which is exactly what happens when you get past a certain age. And that it's freeing to be away from that game of always feeling that you need to be attractive. So if advertisers are targeting older women since they now have more independent spending power, and their definition of how to sell a sense of power is to sell sexual attractiveness, just like it is for young women, then older women are now under the pressure that young women are under as well. It's a pressure that no one really needs. The judgment, are you beautiful, are you sexy, never mind your character or your personal accomplishments, they're really always secondary. So how do we resist this materialistic, superficial consumerism in the guise of empowerment? Or do we just allow ourselves to use these tools to avoid our fears about aging?
Today on the show, we'll be talking about women and aging, in particular, as it relates to mainstream concepts of physical beauty and sexual objectification. First, we'll speak with Dr. Vivian Diller from New York. She's a psychotherapist and the author of Face It, What Women Really Feel As Their Looks Change. And later in the show, we'll be speaking with Irene Sebnopoulos-Elheimer, Executive Director of Women Against Violence Against Women, Rape Crisis Center, and All-Around Good Feminist. This is Sarah Haskins with Skincare.
The polio vaccine. The internet. Furby. You think science has done a lot for us lately? Wait until you see the future.
In the future, you'll be able to erase wrinkles with a revolutionary patch you wear for only 20 minutes. The future is now.
Yeah! Woo!
Yes, ladies, the future is now. We are living in the golden age of skin science. In the olden times, our options for high-quality skincare were few. We used moisturizer and washed our face with soap. We were practically face Amish. But now, in modern times, science has found ways to maximize the youth and elasticity of our skin faster than you can say, futuristic lab full of doctors treating a clone woman.
With new Olay Professional Pro X. A specialized team of dermatologists and Olay have designed Pro X to resignal your skin so it looks more like it did when it was younger.
But can a robot lady learn to love? I wouldn't scoff at that clone lab. The Olay team has developed a body wash that fights a serious skin condition.
Olay Age-Defying Body Wash. Fights the look of body aging.
Body aging? I didn't even know I had body aging. But as it turns out, I've had it for almost 30 years, and I need products to fix it. products that use pictures of science.
New Skin Genesis Pore Minimizer, the first serum from L'Oreal to combine hyaluronic with pore targeting technology.
Look! Chemistry things, probably molecules, right? I think. I don't know. I didn't take chemistry. You can't get much more scientific than graphic representations of how this product works on your skin cells.
Every day, it works at the cellular level to intensely smooth the skin and minimize the appearance of pores.
A new generation moisturizer. Its clinically tested ingredient goes 9 layers deep.
9 layers deep. If you'll notice, it passes through the epidermis, dermis, 7 non-existent layers of skin, and right down to the marbles. Here. The science of beauty isn't just about pictures. Science also uses words. Words that sound sciencey.
The moisturizing formula with phytoniacin.
Fill in wrinkles with collagen biospheres.
In self-targeting.
And restoring CoQ10.
To a deep micro-clean.
If it wasn't for science, you'd just be clean. These advancements in beauty science are promoted by the most beautiful people in our culture. Actresses, who totally use these products. Drew Barrymore, Diane Lane, Penelope Cruz, and even Vanessa Hudgens is getting into the Science Beauty Technology Act with a new way to wash your face, the Neutrogena Wave.
I've used a lot of cleansers, but I've never tried anything like the Wave. Just attach a pad, add some water, and turn it on. Gentle vibrations help open pores.
This product is definitely for washing your face. Yep. So the next time someone says something like, oh, America's falling behind the rest of the world in math and science, remind them. We are way ahead where it counts. On the surface.
You're listening to the F Word Feminist Radio Show. I'm Nicole Deegan. Today I'm speaking with Dr. Vivian Diller, clinical psychologist and co-author of Face It, What Women Really Feel As Their Looks Change. Her book is a psychological guide to help women deal with the emotions brought on by their changing appearances. As a model turned psychotherapist, Diller's had the opportunity to examine the world of beauty from two very different vantage points. From this unique perspective, she explores women's experiences of aging, the masks we use to cover deeper issues, and the role physical appearance plays in women's lives. Thanks so much for speaking with me today, Vivian.
It's great to talk to you.
Maybe to start off, if you can describe a bit about the beauty paradox that you refer to in your book.
Sure. I gave it a name, meaning that I gave the complicated feelings that women have about their aging appearance and name, much like I felt Betty Friedan was looking for a name to describe the no-name illness, you know, of her time. And what that is that, you know, we are a generation that have been brought up with two very different pulls in different directions. On one hand, you know, we were brought up to believe we would be defined by our abilities and our achievements, and yet we were constantly reminded by a youth-obsessed culture that beauty was our currency, right? Our power. It was going to keep us what was from becoming invisible. And I called this the beauty paradox because it actually confuses us. We are told we shouldn't care, or we believe that to be true to our feminist beliefs is to think that our insides matter. And yet we know, as all women do, that for all of history, and will probably continue to be in the future, that clearly our looks are going to matter in our everyday relationships and in our world. So that's what I wanted to give a name to something that I thought many women of my generation, and I'm realizing of, you know, generations that follow, they need a model for how to resolve those opposing trends.
I like how you talk about women's looks as currency. How important is it in our society that women look young and attractive? Like, how do you see the impact on women?
Yeah, I would like to think, and I think many women would like to believe that it should not matter, but we have enormous amount of evidence from women who report the opposite. And because I am a psychologist and I get to hear what otherwise is inappropriate to talk about or in politic or dangerous in a job, I hear that frequently women will feel a discrimination over an aging appearance or even an appearance that is less attractive than someone else. We know that there is what's called lookism. I don't know if you've ever heard that term, but you know, where there is favoritism given to people who appear more attractive. Now, life is such that we're going to see that, and I don't think there's any law that will ever keep that from happening, but when it comes to looking older and the pressure on aging women to reverse that, I think it's a very dangerous precedent because it makes women feel panicky. Instead of what my book is about is how to embrace a changing appearance while you also look after that aging appearance. But if looking after your aging appearance means to try to turn the clock back, I think that's a pretty dangerous message. I think it's epidemic now that we're seeing women do radical measures to make themselves look younger, and they don't feel better.
I was watching an interview that you did about women who were, I believe, in their 70s and getting breast implants and having plastic surgery done. I didn't realize that was such a trend.
Well, you know, plastic surgery is getting younger and getting older. The highest increases are, it's interesting, it's among the younger population and post-baby boomers. It also happens to be among men, too, but they started at a much lower to start with. But women in their 70s and 80s are coming to plastic surgeons saying, you know, we still want to compete in the world of in their professions and their social lives. And it's hard to convince me as a psychologist. I sometimes get the referrals of the women who have gone for their third and fourth plastic surgery. Hard to convince me that a woman in her 70s and 80s is going to feel more youthful by undergoing surgery, although sometimes there are small things that women can do at that age that truly does make them feel better, like changing their diet and exercising more. But the woman you were referring to on that interview, I think she was actually 81. Or there was an 81-year-old woman who was getting breast implants, and her explanation was that she wanted her children and grandchildren to think she was still vibrant. And my reaction to that was, does she really think her grandchildren care about the size of her breasts? But, you know, it was a little bit of a tough argument because really what I support is the freedom for women to choose what is in their best interest. My challenge is to help women understand the choices they're making on levels that go beyond the surface so that they're not responding simply to the media, to the models that they see on even, say, More magazine, which is geared towards older women. We know those models are much younger. The women portrayed in the media as in their 50s and 60s, we know are acted by younger women. And you can count on your hand, you know, the Helen Mirrens and the, you know, women like that who seem true to their age. And we have to, as a group, join together and ourselves be the, I say, the billboards for what it means. You know, you walking down the street, if you are somebody who can carry herself with a good posture, a smile, healthy skin, we are the billboards for the next generation. We can't rely on the Helen Mirrens and the Meryl Streeps because there's so few of them, but there are a lot of us baby boomers, 78 million of us, that really do have to, actually have 78 million men and women, so let's say about 40 million women who have an opportunity to illustrate just by being more calm about our aging appearance for that next generation who, I'm telling you, are frightened. I hear from women in their, you know, 20s and 30s, they're already thinking about what they can do to avoid a wrinkle.
One of the things I like in your work as well is just how you talk about how even, you know, women who have, you know, success and who've worked hard in their life to be valued for their character, their intelligence, their skills, also still come up against these messages and these fears inside ourselves as we age. And I'm wondering what you see as the most common internalized messages about womanhood and aging that you find that women struggle with.
Good question. I think we are hardwired as females to associate aging with loss of fertility. I mean, bottom line, when you think about what our role was for hundreds of millions of years, we were to attract a mate and procreate. It's only in the last 15, maybe 100 years that gradually our roles have shifted so that we do more than just have our children, be fertile women who have our male, the children for our men. And so instinctively, I think when we first see those changes, and we most often see them on our face, I call that the uh-oh moment, I think it resonates with something very basic about who we are fundamentally as women, like what will be our role. So I encourage women when they have that reaction not to dismiss it, because, you know, as a psychologist, I could be one of those who says, oh, you know, it's really what's inside that counts. And I say, what's outside is inside. You know, what you see in the mirror resonates with some very core aspect of who you are. But let's deal with it. If it resonates with your loss of role, that is something we have to challenge ourselves throughout life. Our children grow up, they leave the nest. As they leave the nest, then we have to redefine what makes us viable, valuable women. Does turning back how we look going to revive that sense of fertility? No. It means allowing ourselves to redefine what it means to be attractive, what it means to be to have meaning, what it means to have new roles. And the more we focus on that, and the less, not completely dismiss, less focus on how we appear, I think we're going to be happier women. Does that answer your question? I can't even remember what I know you. What you asked was, it seems so important for women to understand that this is not just a superficial experience. That's why I wanted to give it a name that even sounded in depth, the beauty paradox, because some people get caught up in feeling guilt and shame that they even care.
I know one of the things you have in your book is some kind of specific guidance for women who are facing these feelings, and you've already touched on a few things. I'm just wondering if there's anything further that you would suggest for women who are dealing with this.
Well, the first thing, of course, I want them to buy my book or to read. I write quite a bit on Huffington Post, and I'm constantly trying to get women to join other women. So one of the things I first hope women will do is acknowledge that what they're feeling is shared by millions of women. They're not alone. It's not like being a teenager and being caught in front of the mirror and feeling like, you know, you have to hide. This is something to be talked about. We're not to be embarrassed about the fact that we feel complicated feelings about this issue. That's the first step. It's like in any psychotherapy process, we first have to say what it is we're struggling with. But I'd say the next step is to slow down before you react with actual behavior changes, you know, go out there and do something. I say, no, for a while, talk about this with other women. Think about what your looks really mean to you. How really important is it that you remain looking the same age? Does it impact your job? Does it impact your relationship? One of the interesting comments I often hear is husbands and children who are so upset by their mothers or their wives doing something to their bodies and faces because they love the faces that they have gotten attached to. And women seem to forget that when they go and do things to their bodies. So I say, slow down before you do something and think about it. And then I say, you have to go through a period of mourning. If we don't understand that letting go of a youthful appearance includes a mourning process, then we keep fighting something that surfaces no matter how much you do to your face. And that mourning process doesn't have to lead to depression. It means a process that leads to a redefinition. We know that when we lose something, it makes room for something else. Well, we can't do that unless we go through a psychological period of mourning. And so I encourage, that's one of the steps in the book that leads to the final one, which is finding a new sense of self with the faces that we've come to enjoy again. And I feel like I've gone through that. I now look at women and I look at myself through a very different lens. It's one that's much more flexible. It's not as critical. Women tend to be extremely self-critical. I'm enjoying how I see other women as they age and as I age. And I know that's a hard thing to believe when people say, oh, you know, it's how can you enjoy an aging face? I said, it's just because my attitude about it has really shifted.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for all of your great insight into this issue. It's been great hearing what you have to say.
It's a pleasure to have a chance to talk.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you can repeat the websites that you have forums and information on your work on?
Sure. If you just go to www.viviandiller.com, it will lead you to my website where there are links to Huffington Post articles and to how to purchase my book. It's in soft cover now. It's also in Chinese and several other languages in case you that's not your English isn't your first language. But I truly hope that people start talking about this issue amongst each other. If they can use the book and what we're talking about today to stimulate conversation, then I'll feel really good about that.
Wonderful. Thanks again, Vivian, for speaking
You're
with
very
us
welcome.
Today.
Anytime.
Okay. Have
so
a great
long.
Day. Bye-bye. That was Vivian Diller, co-author of Face It, What Women Really Feel As Their Looks Change.
Hi there. Welcome to another Target Women. Ooh. I turned 30 this week, which means one thing. I'm old. And it makes me kind of nervous. My unscientific research proves that aging disproportionately affects blonde women with short hair who narrate into cameras.
I just coped too, but then my doctor told me about treatment options, including prescriptions.
Are you treating your rheumatoid arthritis but still having trouble with everyday things?
My fibromyalgia muscle pain is real.
I'm Even though I'm old, I don't want the horrifying side effects of aging to prevent me from doing what I love. I want to walk with canoes, peel oranges, play fetch with my pup, and do stuff with horses. Which is why when I choose drugs for my arthritis and osteoporosis, I choose ones with dynamic first syllables.
Well, Reclast helps to re-strengthen my bones to help make them resistant to fracture.
But Enbrel enables me to fight progressive joint damage.
Enbrel gives me energy to do many of the things I love.
Of course, there are downsides to any prescription drug.
Because prescription Enbrel suppresses your immune system, it may lower your ability to fight infections.
Enbrel enfeebles me. Us old people also have bathroom problems. One lady I know peed so much she missed an entire movie. A movie that was so good, the whole audience stayed for the credits. Of course, talking about bladders is embarrassing. It's better to use a symbol to represent your pee-pee place, like water balloons.
A day at the spa with your very best friends. You're ready to be pampered from head to toe. You don't have time for a bladder control problem to interrupt your day.
Ah! Or how about pipe people? That's right, people made of pipes.
I don't always let my bladder problems or the worry my pipes might leak compromise what I like to do, like hunting for bargains.
Instead of buying a pipe hat, why not just buy a new pipe bladder? Then again, I'm old. What do I know? So what did I do when faced with such an alarming array of disabling ailments? I took all the pills at once, and now I feel like I'm 29 again. Different kinds of drugs.
Another thing that I would compromise. Another thing that I would compromise to say. At first, don't want to sympathize. Don't want to sympathize with the darkness.
You're listening to The F Word, and that was Ostra with Hate Crime. We're now speaking with Irene Sepnopoulos-Elheimer, Executive Director of Women Against Violence Against Women Rape Crisis Center. Hi, Irene.
Hello.
Hi. So WAVA has worked alongside over 100,000 women survivors of violence since its start 29 years ago, and the organization receives over 3,000 calls on 24-hour crisis line every year from women of all ages, sizes, colors, and descriptions. And we live in a culture of violence, where women and girls live with violence or the threat of violence every day. And women's looks are often used to redirect blame for male perpetrators of violence onto women, whose looks are somehow at fault, like they're too youthful, too provocative, too inviting, or their looks are somehow exempt them from the possibility of being targeted. They're too old, they're too unattractive, asexual. So in a rape culture where women are simultaneously taught that our looks are our greatest power and also the source of our oppression, what do you think women really feel as their looks change?
Well, thank you for having me on the show. It's a pleasure. And, you know, that's a great question because I think you've caught me when I'm at that point in life where my looks are changing, and that's something that is going to happen, hopefully, that we all get to be a ripe old age and that we're going to have to grapple with that. But I really do believe that, you know, patriarchy and the male gaze is the mirror. And so what is being held up to us is how we're viewed by men. And that's a very scary place to be in, because the other part of that reflection is the culture that you said is a culture of violence in which women are continuously being killed and murdered and raped, and whether it's here in the global north in Canada or, you know, across the waters to the other places in the world. So a very daunting task as a woman to face that reality, and then look into that mirror at whatever age. And I think particularly at this age, and I'm just closing my 49th year, I think that looking into that mirror and having a reflection that is not about the decimation of our planet and decimation of women is, to say the least, difficult, but I do it every day, and I think most of us do. And I think that what heartens me when I look in that mirror is to remember the biophilic, the, you know, the love of women and love of planet. And so still hard to do, but it's a challenge not to look in the mirror and see the reflection from a male gaze in a violent patriarchy. How's that?
Great, thank you. We just spoke with Dr. Vivian Diller, and she was talking about women having a concern around their role after reproduction, after child rearing, and she says that now is the time to redefine what it means to be attractive and to have meaning and to have roles. So I'm wondering, what do you think about this idea of finding a new sense of self, and what are feminists already doing?
Well, I think that looking into the mirror to find out your value and your sense of who you are as a woman is a constant struggle. And I think we're doing it all the time. And so I don't know that, you know, it's never either or. Like, women's lives are so complicated that we're constantly having to weave everything that we're being and doing. And so that, you know, you never stop being a mother. I don't believe that I will ever stop being a mother. I will always have children. And so that what that could look like in my 49th year will most likely be different in my, you know, 70th year if I get there, and so that the redefining, I think, is this constantly growing as who you are as a woman, and I think that part of what I think is really important for us to do as women who are mothering and mentoring other younger women and younger men is to remember and consistently bring with us the learnings that we're living. And part of it is to change our world. And so that I'm hoping that we're all talking about how to be real active participants in stopping the decimation of the world. So it's really not a personal thing, although it's personal to look in the mirror every morning and contemplate our lives and how we're going to make a difference
and make a difference as a mother, make a difference as a lover, make a difference as a as somebody working in the anti-violence field. But I really do think it's about a collective sense of moving forward in our lives, and I want to take that out of the individual, although it's personal. So it's not that it's not a personal thing, but it's not an individual quest. I think the strength of women is to come together as a collective to make those changes, not only for our present reality, but our future reality, because what we've got right now needs to change. And those are the big responsibilities, I think, that we have as women.
I really appreciate what you just said about the collective sense of moving forward, and that it feels personal to each of us, but the way we're going to move forward is together. And I think about the way that advertisers and marketers are targeting each individual woman, and I think constructing an insecurity or a sense of panic or anxiety that wouldn't be there otherwise.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And so I guess I'm wondering. I think we're always focusing on what women should and shouldn't do. Should they get plastic surgery? Should they not? Should they use these face creams? Should they not? You know, and maybe it's enough already with telling women what to do. Like, what else can we be talking about here?
Well, I think that what the messages that were being fed by everything you have said is the women-hating mirror, the reflection is, because, you know, really, those are the hardest messages and the hardest projections to fight off, and that's what they are. They're projections, and so that to really resist that reflection from the male gaze, from our patriarchy, means to think differently about what it means to have wrinkles or what it means to not be pleasing to the male gaze, and to do that is a real transgression, because, you know, there's always the risk of violence at the other end, but I think collectively that to resist that and to talk about it in these terms, that it's not about my job as a woman to be pleasing to the male gaze, whether it's my partner or any other man that happens to be around, so that we're focused on, when we're looking in the mirror, we're looking internally. And those are the places where women's resistance and strength can't be touched by reflections and projections. And I think that, you know, these are really radical ways of thinking about who we are as women, and especially in this time, because the capitalist frenzy that perpetuates our incredible need to consume, whether it's, you know, high heels or makeup or clothes or whatever it is, but it really is about the reflection of the hatred for women, and that's the battle. So how do we do that? How do we talk about what is put out to us in those terms, and how do we then change that reality for all of us? So it's a difficult thing, but I think we have to start talking about it differently. So yes, it's not really about how we're going to please men. It's about how we're going to ensure that the hatred for women doesn't annihilate us, and of course, doesn't annihilate all those good men and all those men that we love, and the men that we give birth to, and the women that we give birth to. So these are really, really important discussions to have, we can't talk about it superficially.
Mm-hmm. I think that hatred of women is particularly sneaky when it's repackaged as, you know, love yourself kind of advertising, you know, that feminist discourse of choice that's been
right.
co-opted in advertising to say, you know, you get to choose this wrinkle cream or that wrinkle cream, or you get to, you know, I'm getting plastic surgery for me. It's for myself. So that kind of hatred is being repackaged as love.
It's insidious, isn't it? It's in everything. It's how to warp the reality. It's how to undermine our consciousness. It's how to accept hatred, and it's really effective. And so, you know, those are the forces that are so really effective. And so maybe we should start getting wrinkle. We should develop some creams that, when you put it on, can erase hatred or get rid of violence. Or we have, you know, some kind of shampoo that we can all use that will, you know, change the way women are viewed in the world. I think we have to answer back in a very way that's I don't know. You know, I'm trying to figure this out for us in terms of using the master's tools. Maybe that's not going to work either. But what you say is absolutely right. There's got to be that something that we can be sold that will make us more acceptable to ourselves. And really, that is about being more acceptable to men. And so I say, you know, let's put our money to really good uses. Let's put our money, the billions that we spend on lotions and potions that are based on a system of woman hating, let's put all that money into forces that can generate wellness and healing and turn the tides of this this kind of apocalyptic kind of race, you know, where we're putting our money into changing the patriarchal systems. And I think that would be a better use of our money and a better way of looking at our mortality, our end in this life. I think that might make us feel better, because these potions don't make us feel better. No matter how many creams I buy, no matter, you know, what product I use in my hair, or, you know, or how the size of my thighs, those things won't make a difference in my life, and because I know it, and they won't make a difference in the future generations' lives. And they certainly won't make a difference to our planet. So, let's how to debunk all that, because that adds to the misery that we already feel.
Irene, that's fantastic. Thank you so much. Really, I think, speaks to that internal resistance that you spoke about and the strength that women already have, and we can use that to try something different.
I think we can. I think we have all the power to do that within ourselves and don't rely on some kind of product. We are the power that can make the difference. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Ciao.
Bye.
On the borderlands of dream, I perceive that if without seeing we all believe what our hearts conceived, ideas would have the power of faith, and minds give rest to spirits displaced, erased with forgetting, filled with unknowing, while I in the gloaming pursued my mind's roaming amid groggy half-recollections, mental health self-inspection. Liberally laced with faces just out of reach, literally out of each, a feature at least recognizable. It worried my mind something sizable, in lieu of brooding, started doing something more advisable. Put my pen to the paper and wait, let my mind float free and the nip just skate till the ink release what my mind had seen, it said slipstream.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the F Word today. That was Belladonna with Slip Street. If you have any comments or feedback, you can email us at feminisms@gmail.com. And if you missed the show, you can always find the F Word podcasts on rabble.ca. You can learn more about us by checking out our blog, as well as finding archives of past shows and information about future shows, all on our website at feminisms.org.